Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for finding us and for tuning in. We appreciate it. The other night, I had just mentioned in passing the revelation by Richard Muller. He was one of those people, a very bright man, professor of physics, I think, University of California, Berkeley, former MacArthur Foundation fellow, you know, genius grant and all that. And he also was funded by the, I think funded is the right way to put it. I may need a little correction on that. But he was funded by the Koch brothers to add to the skepticism about global climate change, global warming. And he did a fairly good job in convincing those who needed to be convinced that global warming was not a man-made phenomenon. Well, as you probably know by now, he's done a complete 180 where it concerns the issue. And to the extent that he wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times yesterday, and then last night, he was on Rachel Maddow's program talking about his conversion. This hour, by the way, before I forget, is sponsored by Bob Milton. Bob, thank you very much. Bob Milton is this hour's sponsor. So Mueller, in his piece in the New York Times, op-ed piece, I want to share some of it with you because it's fairly direct and should put a hole in the balloon of lies that keeps being floated by these right-wing crazies that global warming is not a man-made phenomenon. He says, call me a converted skeptic. 3 years ago, I identified problems in previous climate studies that, in my mind, threw doubt on the very existence of global warming. Last year, following an intensive research effort involving a dozen scientists, I concluded that global warming was real and that the prior estimates of the rate of warming were correct. I'm now going a step further. Humans are almost entirely the cause. Now, let me digress. In the piece that he wrote, he dismantles this right-wing garbage about sunspots and the right-wing garbage about cyclical temperature changes and the right-wing garbage about the tilt of the Earth's axis and all this crapola that's been put out there by the right wing, funded, of course, by the fossil fuel industry that certainly does not want the population of the United States or the global population to understand that they, the fossil fuel industry, and we, the users of fossil fuels, are committing suicide. Let me go back to Richard Muller. He said, my total turnaround in such a short time, 3 years, is the result of careful and objective analysis by the Berkeley Earth Surface Temperature Project, which I founded with my daughter Elizabeth. Our results show that the average temperature of the Earth's land has risen by 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit over the past 250 years, including an increase of 1.5 degrees over the most recent 50 years. Moreover, it appears likely that essentially all of this increase results from the human emission of greenhouse gases. These findings are stronger than those of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. That's the United Nations group that defines the scientific and diplomatic consensus on global warming. In its 2007 report, the IPCC concluded only that most of the warming of the prior 50 years could be attributed to humans. It was possible, according to the IPCC consensus statement, that the warming before 1956 could be because of changes in solar activity, and that even a substantial part of the more recent warming could be natural. Our Berkeley Earth approach used sophisticated statistical methods developed largely by our lead scientist, Robert Rohde, which allowed us to determine Earth-land temperature much further back in time. We carefully studied issues raised by skeptics For example, biases from urban heating. We duplicated our results using rural data alone. From data selection, prior groups selected fewer than 20% of the available temperature stations. We used virtually 100%. From poor station quality, we separated, analyzed good stations and poor ones. And from human intervention and data adjustment, our work is completely automated and hands-off. In our papers, we demonstrate that none of these potential troublesome effects unduly biased our conclusions. So in that paragraph, what Mueller is doing is eliminating all the garbage that the anti-scientists have been putting out there over the past, 15, 20, 30 years, that all of this global increase in temperature can be explained by natural, quote, phenomena. Mueller is declaring here and now, and in his papers that you can find, by the way, online, that in their research they allowed for all those arguments and found none of them to be true, not one. He goes on, the historic temperature pattern we observed has abrupt dips that match the emissions of known explosive volcanic eruptions. The particulates from such events reflect sunlight, make for beautiful sunsets, and cool the Earth's surface for a few years. There are small, rapid variations attributable to El Nino and other ocean currents, such as the Gulf Stream. Because of such oscillations, the flattening, so to speak, of the recent temperature rise that some people claim is not, in our view, statistically significant. What has caused the gradual but systematic rise of 2.5 degrees? What has caused? We tried fitting the shape to simple math functions, to solar activity, and even to rising functions like world population. By far, the best match was to the record of atmospheric carbon dioxide measured from atmospheric samples and air trapped in polar ice. Just as important, our record is long enough that we could search for the fingerprint of solar variability based on the historical record of sunspots. That fingerprint is absent. Although the IPCC allowed for the possibility that variations in sunlight could have ended the so-called Little Ice Age, a period of cooling from the 14th century to about 1850, our data argues strongly that the temperature rise of the past 250 years cannot be attributed to solar changes. This conclusion, in retrospect, not too surprising. We've learned from satellite measurements that solar activity changes the brightness of the sun very little. The careful analysis by our team is laid out in 5 scientific papers now available at berkeleyearth.org. Berkeleyearth.org. That site also shows our chart of temperatures from 1753 to the present, with its clear fingerprint of volcanoes and carbon dioxide, but containing no component that matches solar activity. 4 of our papers have undergone extensive scrutiny by the scientific community, and the newest, a paper with the analysis of the human component, is now posted, along with the data and computer programs used. Such transparency is the heart of the scientific method. So if you find our conclusions implausible, tell us of any errors of data or analysis. And in that paragraph, he challenges the crazies to go ahead and examine his data, if they understand, and challenge it. In closing, he says, science is that narrow realm of knowledge that, in principle, is universally accepted. I embarked on this analysis to answer questions that, to my mind, had not been answered. I hope that the Berkeley Earth analysis will help settle the scientific debate regarding global warming and its human causes. Then comes the difficult part, agreeing across the political and diplomatic spectrum about what can and should be done.
Are you ready for Radical Talk Radio? It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Now, after that piece appeared in the New York Times yesterday, Rachel Maddow had Professor Mueller on her program last night, and he said some things that are a little weird, but maybe because he is a professor of physics, and rather than make conclusions based on evidence other than empirical evidence, other than provable evidence, he would rather hedge what he's saying. For example, now this is not part of that, but he said on Rachel's program that the only way to prevent global warming was to stop using coal for power. He told Rachel, quote, "I think there are two key things that we can do. One of them is a global effort toward energy efficiency and conservation. I think that's realistic. But the biggest thing is, and this will be controversial, the biggest thing is a switch away from coal and to the one thing that can replace it in the poor countries that are going to produce most of the carbon dioxide, and that would be natural gas. We have to make fracking clean so that countries such as China and India can switch. Natural gas produces one-third of the carbon dioxide of coal for the same energy. If we don't do this, I don't think we have a chance." Now, Mueller went on to insist that it was possible to use fracking in a way that did not produce environmentally harmful effects like contaminating groundwater. He said clean fracking, the technology there, is something that is achievable and something we really have to aim at because nothing else can be afforded by the poor countries. Now, right away, you can find reason to challenge that. Some of the skeptics at the, I think it was Huffington Post website at the Times, I guess, website. There's some readers who concluded that he is, even at this late day, Professor Mueller, leading the hound dogs, as it were, away from his former sponsors, the Koch brothers, because apparently the Kochs are not that involved in coal mining, but they are deeply involved in oil and natural gas. So, you know, you can take everything Professor Mueller says regarding fracking with a trainload of salt, or you can accept the fact that the scientific method allows for people to make statements, qualified statements. When he says clean fracking, the technology there is something that is achievable and something we really have to aim at. So in that particular sentence, he's not making a claim that clean fracking is a given. He said it's something we should aim at, something that is achievable. So I think what he's saying is, at the present, it is not clean, and it has not been achieved. And if we don't work on that, then along with the continued use of coal, we are finished. As a matter of fact, he said, if we don't do this, I don't think we have a chance. So whatever Professor Mueller is referring to where it concerns so-called clean fracking, I think we should all be interested in finding out, as the professor seems to be saying, whether or not it is achievable. If it is not achievable, if the one of the consequences of this so-called fracking is the destruction of groundwater, if it is causing disturbances deep enough underground to cause earthquakes, although I have a bit of a problem with that. You know, earthquake is a geological phenomenon that usually has to do with shifting tectonic plates or shifting chunks of the Earth's mantle that I think is far deeper than fracking reaches. Now, I don't know. But I know that the earthquakes that cause most of the damage are tectonic plate shifts, aren't they? And I don't think, and again, I'm just saying, you know, I don't think that pumping high-pressured fluids into these fissures is what's causing the earthquakes. I don't know. I don't know. But I appreciate the fact that Mueller, even though he was funded by someone who wants to commit global suicide, he finally recognized the science that he developed and came around to the conclusion he came to.
It's Mike Malloy.
This hour is being sponsored by Bob Milton. Thanks, Bob. Now, regarding Mueller, let's continue on at Daily Kos today, written by Card Shark. Card Shark feels that Mueller is flim-flamming where it concerns fracking. Card Shark writes, UC Berkeley physicist Richard Mueller is making headlines and got a positive glow on Maddow's show last night for dramatically changing his views on global warming. First, he had concluded, long after the vast majority of the scientific community, that it was actually happening. And second, he has finally decided, along with significant tardiness, that it is certainly caused by human activity. If it were just one late-to-the-conclusion scientist, it would not seem like a big deal. But this scientist founded, with his daughter Elizabeth, the Berkeley Earth Surface Temperature in 2010, which has received at least a $150,000 grant from the Koch brothers. So now it's being spun as the turnaround of a Koch-funded scientist coming out with the raw facts and let the chips fall where they may. Not so fast. This is looking very fishy. Interesting, Rachel Maddow had just before her interview with Mueller put on a short piece about fracking, how it seems to be causing earthquakes, sending flammable gas out people's faucets, and how it's done with a secret mix of chemicals whose effects no one really knows. Place this revelation against the background of all the, quote, promise of natural gas, end quote, commercials that are on the tube that mention the process of getting gas from the earth without ever using the word fracking. So Rachel quite naturally asked him what the alternative was, and he first said that much could be done by increasing energy efficiency. True enough. And then he said that we have to get off of coal, and ended up saying that we have a huge opportunity with natural gas, and that the dangers of fracking were way overblown. Rachel seemed somewhat off stride at that and briefly mentioned that, of course, it would be good if we could be sure that there would not be worse consequences. Make no mistake, I think this guy is still working for the Koch brothers. The same day, yesterday, his daughter Elizabeth had a piece in the opinion section of the San Francisco Chronicle titled Fracking Helps Reduce Polluting Emissions. There, she claimed to be a co-founder with her father of this Berkeley Earth Surface Temperature organization. She goes through some nice green-sounding statements like energy efficiency, that we need to do things at low cost, etc., but she says that we need to get developing nations to switch to natural gas. She then plugs her father's book, titled Energy for Future Presidents, and claims that, quote, though some environmentalists still oppose fracking, end quote, it has helped lower greenhouse gas emissions, blah, blah, blah. Then today, Tuesday, the Chronicle comes out with a front page article about the scientist who has changed his mind on global warming and touts how his research helped him reach this conclusion years after most of the world's scientists. But there's not one word there about fracking. Now, I have had some experience as an editor dealing with PR spin, and this smells very much like it. It is quite possible that the Kochs have decided that the way to keep the billions rolling in is not to fight climate change head-on, but to divert attention to a nice-sounding and perceptibly attractive alternative that they can still control, natural gas. It will be interesting to see just how this little campaign continues and whether or not Rachel Maddow decides she's been had. If she does, you can expect a scathing bit of commentary in the next couple of days. So there you have the response from Daily Kos, from the diarist, who did I say it was? Card Shark. Interesting. The bit about coming late to the party is certainly true. I mean, the rest of the scientific community long ago concluded a couple of obvious facts about global climate change. So if Professor Mueller is hesitant because that's the way a scientific method works, then more power to him. I mean, the hesitancy, the refusal to make definitive statements until the definitive statements can be proven, and if it is a case where they can be challenged by other scientists to reach the same conclusion, the challenge is issued and the same conclusion is reached, well, then great. I mean, that's what the scientific method is. Unlike religion that makes categorically certain and definitive statements, science doesn't. Or science will and then offer it up for challenge to other scientists. Religion doesn't do that. Religion no more does that than collectively pee up a rope. This is the truth. So let's pay close attention to what happens with Richard Mueller and his, his conclusions and his observations about fracking. I'd be curious. I don't go anywhere near the Rupert Murdoch terror broadcast organization, because if you do, you'll either get flashed by the underpants of some of those women that sit on the set and talk about, quote, the news, end quote, or your mind will start deteriorating into a clump of gooey, some sort of gooey matter. But I'd be curious to know how the Murdoch propaganda crew is treating this to them. I'm sure this is a conversion on the road to Damascus, not unlike what Saul went through, right? To the scientific community, it's probably more along the lines of, Jesus, Richard, where you been? So, we'll see what happens. You heard, of course, what happened in India. So I'm sorry. I don't know why I laugh. I don't. Maybe it's because it scares the hell out of me. 700 million people without electricity for several hours. It's being called the world's biggest blackout. Yeah, well, that's pretty true. This happened today, Tuesday, India time. Three of its regional grids collapsed. And the resulting chaos, you can imagine, 1.2 billion people, is that how many people are in India? So half of them were without power. Hundreds of trains stalled, traffic lights went out. You can imagine the traffic jams in New Delhi. Electric crematoria stopped operating. Some with bodies half burnt.
Oh my God.
That's what the Associated Press, that's how they report it. Power officials released that statement. Emergency workers rushed generators to coal mines to rescue miners trapped underground. This massive failure, a day after a similar but smaller power failure, has raised serious concerns about India's outdated infrastructure and the government's inability to meet its huge appetite for energy. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. Power Minister Sushil Kumar Shinde blamed this crisis on states in India taking more than their allotted share of electricity. Sounds like what Republicans would do. Anyway, the new power failure affected upwards of 700 million people across 20 of India's 28 states. The blackout was unusual in its reach, stretching from the border with Myanmar in the northeast to the Pakistani border, about 3,000 kilometers away. The impact, however, it says here, was softened by Indians' familiarity with frequent blackouts and the widespread use of backup generators for major businesses and key facilities such as hospitals and airports. And anyway, the article goes on, the Associated Press. The power minister of West Bengal state said the situation is very grave. We're doing everything to restore power. But towards the end of the Associated Press report on this, it says the power deficit was worsened by a weak monsoon that lowered hydroelectric generation and kept temperatures higher, further increasing electricity usage for people seeking to cool off. You get that? The power deficit was worsened by a weak monsoon. Not enough rain. Global climate change. Ouch. So the manner in which global climate change is affecting just about everything that touches human life, everything, or conversely, everything that we touch, everything from power generation to weather patterns, to ice melt, to crop failures, to the increase of bugs and crawly things, to the spread of tropical diseases that were prominent in the tropics prior to this change in global temperature. All of this is occurring, and in its unique way, it affects different parts of the planet differently. But it all has the same genesis, don't you think?
Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Bob Milton. Thank you, Bob, very much. I appreciate it. So, Harry Reid went after a fellow Mormon. That's what makes this story so unusual. You know, that tribal thing. You know, Mormons tell the truth. Mormons don't lie. Unless they're, I guess the Mormon faith allows you to lie if you are working for the greater good of the Mormon God. I would imagine evangelical Christians are allowed to do that too. You can tell lies if the ultimate outcome glorifies, you know, the sky being. Anyway, Harry Reid says, he has an informed explanation for why Mitt Romney refuses to release additional tax returns. Reid says he got a phone call from a Bain investor. You know, Bain company. And this guy said that Romney didn't pay any taxes for 10 years, which makes sense. I mean, I'm sure that if that's not right on target, it's probably very close. I don't know why Reid would make it up or why he would go public with this phone call without releasing the name of the person who said it. I don't know. Who knows? And bottom line, who really cares about this little bit of palace intrigue? But I'm willing to come down on the side of Harry Reid on this one. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Mitt Romney never paid taxes for 10 years. Come on, give me a break. Jesus. People in that 0.1% or whatever the hell, wherever the hell Romney lives, they don't pay taxes, period. I mean, that's the whole idea. And this person went on to claim that Romney's worth a hell of a lot more than 200 or 300 million. Reid said, quote, referring to Romney, he said, his poor father must be so embarrassed about his son, end quote. He's referring to George Romney's decision to turn over 12 years of tax returns when he ran for president in 68. Reid also said that Romney is so useless he couldn't make it through a Senate confirmation process as a mere cabinet nominee, owing to the fact that he refuses to lay out anything about his personal finances, other than this ridiculous 2011 or whatever the hell it was, 2010 tax return. Now, what is interesting, Reid recounted the person on the phone as saying, Harry, he didn't pay any taxes for 10 years, so it must be somebody that knows Reid. He didn't pay any taxes for 10 years. Now, do I know that that's true, Reid said? Well, I'm not certain, but obviously he can't release those tax returns. How would it look? Reid went on, you guys have said his wealth is $250 million. He was being interviewed by Huffington Post. You have said his wealth was $250 million. Not a chance in the world. It's a lot more than that. I mean, you do pretty well if you don't pay taxes for 10 years when you're making millions and millions of dollars. Now, here's the interesting part. The Romney campaign's press secretary, Andrea Saul, has previously denied rumors that Romney didn't pay, quote, any taxes at all, end quote. Romney recently told ABC News, however, that he couldn't recall if there were years when he paid below the 13.9% tax rate that he paid in 2010. He said he was happy to go back and look, and then his campaign declined to do that. Asked for a response to Reid's latest comment, Romney campaign advisor Kevin Madden said that Romney had, quote, gone above and beyond the disclosure requirements by releasing 2 years of personal tax returns, in addition to the hundreds of pages of personal financial disclosure documents he's provided to the FEC and made public, end quote. This guy Madden, the Romney campaign advisor, added that, quote, it's troubling and disappointing that Senator Reid would cite Governor Romney's father, George, as part of a personal attack against the governor. We have many substantive disagreements with the senator and his policies, but using insults about a father-son relationship is a step too far. Insults about a father-son relationship, Christ almighty. But do you notice what's missing here? Yeah, you do, don't you? There is no firm denial that the 10 years of no taxes is not absolutely true. No denial. No denial. They shift it to, well, Harry Reid shouldn't be issuing insults about a father-son relationship, which is not what Reid did. The fact is, George Romney released 12 years. The fact is, Mitt Romney releases nothing. One dummied up return that shows he paid 13.9%. Big effing deal. Now, here's the other thing that is irritating to me. Where are you teabag filth screaming about Obama's birth certificate? You useless bastards, where are you? Why don't you demand that your candidate now, I don't care if you're a T-Bag, I wouldn't have voted for it. He's your candidate, scum. So why don't you demand that these tax returns be revealed? I'll tell you why you don't. Because you're a bunch of hypocritical cockroaches. But you'll notice in all the statements coming out today as a result of what Harry Reid said, not one statement so far, I mean, maybe it'll come tomorrow, not one statement has categorically denied or stated that what Reid brought out in public today is not true. Not one categorical denial. Well, what do you suppose that means? It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program, Hour 2 tonight. This hour is being sponsored by Bruce Reynolds. And Bruce's message tonight is a birthday celebration, and we want to share it with Mike and Kathy, who have done so much to help all of us keep our sanity. Just a few years ago, I was howling at the moon. It was obvious what was going on with my country, but I thought I was the only one to see it. I would rant for hours. My wife, Kathy, was beginning to think I was deranged, but then we got the XM, and there you were. You and Hartman, Papantonio, Bobby, Ed, actual sane people on the air, raging with me. Now, my wife, Kathy, is aware, as are so many, many others. The truth is not out there. The truth is on the radio, on the Molloy Show. Thanks, Mike. We're keeping one lit for you. Rage on. Well, Bruce, that was very nice. Thank you. Thank you for the comments and also for the sponsorship, for sure. So nobody in the Romney camp will deny that the Mitster never paid any taxes for 10 years. That's the reason he won't release anything. Of course! And who'd have thunk old Harry Reid would have the testicles... Ooh, we talked about that last night. Would have the testicles to actually... Oh, that's such a sexist way to put it, Molloy. Let me back up. So who would have thought that Harry Reid would have the courage to say what he said today? That's weird. And I have a feeling that, I don't know why I have this feeling, but I have a feeling that it's probably true. I mean, before the Reid comment. Didn't you? Didn't you think, well, the reason he won't release him is some bitch never paid any taxes? The ultra wealthy in this country do not pay taxes. That is for people like you and me. We are the ones that are supposed to pull the wagon. They are the ones that are supposed to ride in the wagon. So, remember I told you last night that the, was it the Chinese? No, the Iranians. The Iranians put on trial a bunch of people who were convicted of, ultimately convicted of bank fraud, and the three of the banksters were sentenced to death. They will be hanged or maybe shot by firing squad. I'm not sure which. But there usually is no appeal for an Iranian death sentence, especially if you are a scum-sucking banker that steals from your fellow citizens. Would that the United States was as civilized around this particular issue as Iran. Oh, Mike, but you're against the death penalty. Nothing is 100%, right? But now there's this. Officials in eastern China have canceled a planned industrial waste pipeline project. Pipeline. After 1,000 environmental demonstrators occupied a government office. Occupied? Overturned cars, destroyed computers, and beat police officers. The demonstration in the city of Qidong was the latest in a string of protests sparked by fears of environmental degradation. Wow. Zhang Guahua, I know. Mayor of the eastern city of Nantong announced the cancellation of the pipeline, which would have emptied waste water from a Japanese-owned paper factory via the coastal town of Qidong, into the sea. It is the second industrial project to be canceled in a month. The decision to end this came a few hours after about 1,000 protesters marched through the city, shouting slogans against the pipeline. Now, this city is not out in the country somewhere. It's about an hour north of Shanghai. Several protesters entered the city government's main building, were seen smashing computers, overturning desks, throwing documents out of windows to loud cheers from the crowd. Five cars and one minibus were also upended, according to Reuters reporters at the scene. At least two police officers were dragged into the crowd and punched and beaten a bloody. Environmental worries have stoked calls for expanded rights for citizens. Blah, 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 blah. This protest followed demonstrations against projects in another town earlier this month and in the cities of Dalian in the northeast and Haimen in southern Guangdong province for the past year. I'm sorry, I just can't do the Chinese names. The government of Shifang halted a multi-million pound copper alloy plant project because it said there was insufficient public understanding and support after tear gas was used to disperse protesters. So the Chinese, they occupy the offices of the people who are going to do this. They smash up computers, overturn desks, beat police officers. Can you imagine what would happen if a couple of police officers at a demonstration in the United States was dragged into a crowd and punched bloody? Can you imagine how many demonstrators would be instantly shot on the spot? Huh? I can't either. But I bet you it would be more than a couple. And Tom in Daytona wanted to answer this question I asked the other night about, can anyone tell me why we are in Afghanistan? Tom in Daytona writes, Mike, I was once told by an experienced bomber pilot that had done tours in the Vietnam War, the answer to your question about why we are there, we are there for the Dumpex. D-U-M-P-E-X. A Dumpex is where the pilots were given the mission day after day to dump on coordinates in the trackless jungle canopy of Southeast Asia. What was the purpose of the Dumpex? There was no visible target. There was no bomb damage assessment. The purpose of a Dumpex is to expend ordnance and maintain procurement budget levels for those contractors who manufacture the ordnance. If one expended less ordnance, that part of the budget would be reduced. So it's all about sortie rates, fuel consumption, parts, replacements, and ordnance expended. What happened or didn't happen on the ground was irrelevant. The budget and ordnance stocks needed to be replaced and maintained and expended at a certain level. It is my personal experience that the claims of precision targeting are highly unlikely to be true. An American is lucky if he can find a toilet in a foreign culture. Just what are the criteria for targeting a militant for death? Undisclosed. I've heard a ridiculous concept called signature patterns. This is the type of thing the intelligence agencies resort to when they don't know what the hell they're doing. If a certain pattern of activity is recognized about a cultural feature commonly known as a residence, then it is targeted. Home plus military age males plus rifles equals militant. Interesting that the close air support model is brought up when discussing drone missions. There is no close air support in Pakistan, Yemen, or Somalia. The bottom line easily is that expending ordnance and drones is the mission to support defense contractor profits and empire building within the various military and intelligence bureaucracies. It's the latest thing you know. Get on with the program. I noted the propaganda aspect of being concerned for the family members of the condemned target in drone strikes, as if there was some aspect of concern for legalities of some sort. There are no legalities. What are they accomplishing? Nothing. The Afghan government is the most corrupt in the world and has zero public support outside of Kabul. Tom in Daytona.
I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could?
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Twenty-one past the hour. I have to share with you a little bit of Georgia now, the metro Atlanta area. When I moved here about 40 years ago, there was about a little over a million population in what was then considered metro Atlanta, three-county area. It expanded five counties, and now it's up to 15 counties, and the population is approaching 6 million. The commute time for so many people here is the worst in the country. Hour and a half commutes each way to and from work are not unusual. Now, some of that is caused by the fact that a lot of people abandoned Atlanta when they had their first black mayor. And a lot of it is because when the rapid rail issue first came up in metro Atlanta, there were three counties that didn't want any part of it because Negroes would come move out here. So as a result, over the course of the past three or four decades, Atlanta, metro Atlanta, even with all the road expansions, when I first moved here, most of the interstates were two lanes. Now most of them are 14 lanes. But even with that, are four lanes to 14. But even with that expansion, the traffic situation in metro Atlanta has become literally impossible. I know a lot of people refer to Los Angeles as the worst traffic in the world, or New York City. Not true. Or even Sacramento. But none of that is true. Atlanta has the worst traffic ever. So 2 years ago, a lot of people, black and white politicians, Democrat and Republican, they got together to try to work out some kind of a regional solution They divided the metro area into, they divided it into 12 regions where in each region would benefit from something called the special tax referendum, special local option tax. Now, the tax was to run for 10 years. It was a 1%, a penny on the dollar, 1 cent sales tax. And that penny would generate the $6.8 billion to be spent to untie this disaster here in the metro 15-county Atlanta area. And I'm telling you, unless you've actually been here, you don't know what I'm talking about. But the white governor and the black mayor of Atlanta, on one of the few things that joined forces was this. The Chamber of Commerce and a lot of so-called liberal groups joined forces on this. There was some dissent. I'm not saying all the progressives, all the liberals went along with this. But so today was the day. 1 cent tax. It would run for 10 years, would generate the revenue needed. It would provide tens of thousands of jobs for the metro Atlanta area. It included bikeways. It included some expansion of roadways. It included mass transit. It included new rail lines. It really was a comprehensive plan. Everybody signed off on it, and then they turned it over to the jackasses that vote. Well, let me tell you what happened. In Region 1, Northwest Georgia, it was defeated 67% to 33%. In Region 2, the Georgia Mountains, it was defeated 76% to 24%. In Region 3, Atlanta, it was defeated 66% to 34%. In Region 4, defeated 37%. In Region 5, defeated 59% to 41%. Region 6, defeated 57% to 43%. And that number pretty much holds. It's about a 60-40 split of no, no, and no. Now, the part about this that just cracks me up is that this was the last best chance to pull Atlanta's lungs out of a disaster. We have more red alert or ozone, high ozone days now in Atlanta than I think they do in Los Angeles. I remember when Denver had this problem and Denver cleaned it up. But Atlanta, no. So the results are coming in, and the special local option sales tax, 1 penny. And I saw lots of interviews with people, exit polling. People say, I'm not voting for any more taxes. I got enough taxes. I wonder how many people now are going to choke to death and die, people who voted against this with their COPD, because you know a lot of people in the South smoke cigarettes and smoke cigars and so on. How many people are going to choke to death? How many more cancer cases are going to arise? How much more skin cancer? How many more kids will develop asthma? It's just astonishing to me, but not surprising.
Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, radical. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Bruce Reynolds. Bruce writes, tonight's a birthday celebration we want to share with Mike and Kathy, who have done so much to help all of us keep our sanity. Just a few years ago, I was howling at the moon It was obvious what was going on with my country, but I thought I was only the only one to see it. I would rant for hours. My wife, Kathy, was beginning to think I was deranged. Then we got XM, and there you were. You and Hartman, Pap, Bobby, Ed, actual sane people on the air, raging with me. Now, my Kathy is aware, as are so many, many others. The truth is not out there. The truth is on the radio, on The Molloy Show. Thanks, Mike. We're keeping one lit for you. Rage on. Very kind, Bruce. Thank you, and thank you for the sponsorship. That is a very kind statement. From Bob. And, well, but let me preface it by saying, you know, I keep waffling. I know that's what it sounds like on the election coming up November, 3rd? And I've made my statements about Obama, and they're no different, really, from the except they're more intense from the statements I made 4 years ago when he was running for re-election. It was very clear that Obama was not a liberal. He certainly was not a progressive. It was hard to determine what he was. He was certainly a great speaker, gave great speeches. But as your grandma used to say, the proof is in the pudding. And I think that on certain issues, not everything, on certain issues, Obama has demonstrated that he is beyond center-right. If he were a Caucasian, I think the right-wingers in this country, the white right-wingers, would be celebrating his presidency. The only reason they are not is because he is not a Caucasian, even though his mother was, but that doesn't matter. In the United States of America, we have the one-drop rule. So I have not been supportive the way a lot of our listeners here think I should be, regarding Obama's reelection. And, of course, I'm constantly reminded of what the choices are. So I get this letter from Bob, and I want to share it with you. Hi, Mike. The first 2 years, we had both chambers, and it was unprecedented. I believe that everyone has learned something. We could see a shift to the base in both parties who win after November because of the abolition of the filibuster. That doesn't make sense, Philip. All right. That means there is hope and risks after this election. You are maybe the most passionate voice in the progressive movement, and we need you to turn your voice 100% toward the GOP. We also have few stations. We already have fewer stations in the GOP, and if we don't maximize the one that we have to explain the difference between two agendas, we will be in trouble. After the election, you could lead the movement to put pressure on the Democrats to act on the change. We need your focus 100% between now and the election day on stopping the GOP agenda. You have every reason to criticize the administration, but in the next 99 days, we do not want your position to be interpreted as if both parties are identical. You know what could happen. You know what could happen to the Supreme Court if the GOP wins, to the schools all across the country if the GOP wins, to Medicare, Social Security if GOP wins, to Medicaid if GOP wins, to a clean energy future if the Republicans win, to the deficit with another $5 trillion tax cut to the rich if the GOP wins, to the unemployment program if the GOP wins. We need to use every second on the air to focus on stopping the tsunami on middle class safety net that will come if the GOP wins. Please, Mike, do not see this as negative because you are a great voice and someone that I respect dearly. I hope you will help us in the next 99 days to have the picture of what is at stake and how to turn things around on election day. Signed, Bob. I don't know. You know how to respond to that. I really don't. It is difficult to play pretend for me. I've been different times in my life. I was very easy to play pretend, to play make believe, to believe things that were not true, to pretend things were not true, to get deeply enmeshed in avoidance and denial about certain issues, blah, 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 blah. And I think most of us probably go through some of that. But as we age, we come to, I think, some pretty clear realizations that really and truly, the older you get, the fewer places you have left to hide, if you're honest. Now, a lot of people practically worship their own deceit. It becomes their survival mechanism, whether that deceit is political or religious or mystical, whatever it is. The non-reality of what they hold the closest becomes the thing that they put their faith in. But some of us have found we can't go that route, even though we'd like to. I've often said, boy, I wish I had religious faith so I could just dump all this in somebody else's lap, so to speak, and forget about it. But, you know, I can't do it. And a lot of people can't do it. Millions of people can't do it. And those of us who can't do it, who can't embrace deceit, are kind of left on our own, even though there are millions of us. You know, it gets pretty lonely sometimes because you can't. It's just difficult to talk about it with your friends, especially if your friends have certain shibboleths that they hold dear, like religion or some political belief or what have you. Now, having blah, blah, blah all that out there, I cannot in good conscience pretend for anyone, not for Bob here or not for myself, not for anyone, that the best this country can produce is another 4 years of Barack Obama. Now, it goes without saying that the worst this country could do would be 4 years of Mitt Romney. I understand that. Mitt Romney is a joke. He's a clown. He's an idiot. He's nothing. I mean, he's not even in the same universe as the type of person, man or woman, that we need to lead this country. He's not even close. Obama is not that close either, but he's a couple of steps ahead of Romney, wouldn't you say? I mean, depending on your point of view. I have a feeling that there is so much money sloshing around inside the system that has been so totally corrupted by this neo-Nazi, this neo-fascist, I should say, Supreme Court, with their Citizens United ruling. There's so much money slopping and sloshing around by a handful of billionaires who are just goddamn determined to destroy the country, to get involved in a massive die-off. They got to get rid of 3, 4, 5 billion earthlings as quickly as possible. So there is that element. Now, I think everyone's going to have to make their own choice. You know, what do you want to do? Do you want to opt out altogether? Do you want to vote for Mitt Romney? Do you want to vote for Barack Obama? Opting out is in fact a vote for one or the other, depending on where you live. So it's a hard choice. It really is. I'm not going to, first of all, my voice is infinitesimal. It means nothing. The things I say on this radio program are at, see, I'm not famous and a huge persona like Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh. They can command thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people to show up for a religious rally someplace, just like Hitler could, just like any demagogue can. So the people who listen to this program are scattered around the country. There are not that many of us. I understand that. I accept that. As a matter of fact, I think it's great. So my voice, Bob, is entirely insignificant. It doesn't make any damn difference what I say regarding a political candidate. Being fully aware of that, then, it is impossible for me to pretend that something else is true. I have no influence. I don't want any. I only have my own little teensy-weensy slice of reality here to deal with. And within that little teensy-weensy slice of reality, I am going to have to do what, I don't want to say what my conscience tells me to do, but I'm going to have to do what leaves me untainted by self-deception. How's that? And what you do, Bob, and what anyone else does is entirely up to you. You know, have at it. You've got three choices. Vote for him, vote for him, vote for nobody. But you're going to have to make that choice. I'm not going to have any influence on anybody, anywhere, about their vote come November 3rd or whatever it is. All right? We'll be back after the break.
Sleepless night. Can I introduce a catheter? Siphon up your life.
Once again, this hour has been sponsored by Bruce Reynolds. Thank you, Bruce. His message tonight is a birthday celebration. We want to share it with Mike and Kathy, who have done so much to help all of us keep our sanity. A few years ago, I was howling at the moon. It was obvious what was going on with my country, but I thought I was the only one to see it. I would rant for hours. My wife, Kathy, was beginning to think I was deranged. But then we got XM Radio, and there you were, you and Hartman and Pap and Bobby and Ed, actual sane people on the air, raging with me. Now, Kathy is aware, as are so many, many others, the truth is not out there. The truth is on the radio, on the Malloy Show. Thanks, Mike. We're keeping one lit for you. Rage on. Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate what you had to say. After the next break, we will take your phone calls. The number here is 877-996-2556. So if you would like to check in and join the fun of frivolity, that is the dominant factor of this radio program, please do. Fun and frivolity. All right. I mentioned this last week. Alex Seitz Ward, or Wald, writing at Salon.com, brings it up again here. Democrats, as you know, always charge that Republicans are trying to suppress the vote of liberal voting blocs, like young people or immigrants or black folk. While Republicans just laugh and call it ludicrous and offensive and say it's all a bunch of ridiculous accusations. That is, every Republican except for Florida's former Republican Party chairman, Jim Greer, who blew the lid off what he claims was a systemic effort to suppress the black vote. In a 630-page deposition recorded over 2 days in late May, Greer, who is on trial for corruption charges, unloaded a litany of charges against the wackadoo right-wing crazies in his party, including the effort to suppress the black vote. We talked about this when? Last week? In a deposition released to the press yesterday, no, I guess it was yesterday, Greer mentioned a December 2009 meeting with party officials. He said, quote, "I was upset because the political consultants and staff were talking about voter suppression and keeping blacks from voting." This is according to the Tampa Bay Times. He also said party officials discussed how minority outreach programs were not fit for the Republican Party. Rick Scott, the governor, is currently facing inquiries from the Justice Department and pressure from civil rights groups over his purging of voter rolls in the state, an effort that critics say has disproportionately targeted minorities and other Democratic voters. One group suing the state of Florida claims up to 87% of the voters purged from the polls so far, or from the rolls, voter rolls so far, have been people of color. Scott, the governor, defends the purge, even though he was erroneously listed as dead himself on the rolls in 2006. Vanity Fair noted in a big 2004 story on the Sunshine State's voting problems, quote, Florida is a state with a history of disenfranchising blacks, end quote. And it goes on and on and on. You remember what happened at the 2000 election, where the state of Florida sent a list of 50,000 alleged ex-felons to the counties, instructing them to purge those names from their list. But it turned out that that list included almost half of that number, innocent people, 54% of whom was black. Now, this was done, what was the name of that company? It was based here in Atlanta. And this was a determined effort to steal Florida away from Al Gore. And it was successful. It worked. Nothing succeeds like success, as far as I'm concerned. Just about every election, national and state, that's been held since has been tainted with what happened in Florida by these voting machines. Brad Friedman at bradblog.com has been writing about this for years. If you really want to know, you really want to dip into this insanity, go to bradblog.com and check what Brad has written over the years about this. But so now you have the former chairman of the Republican Party stating categorically under oath in a deposition that, yes, this is not made up stuff. I mean, Brad Friedman's been trying to tell this to people for God knows how long. This is not made up stuff. This goes on. Black folk know it. It's just the Caucasians that insist on being stupid about this, insist on being in denial or avoiding the truth. This is what we're just talking about. But, you know, so-called people of color understand all of this. They've dealt with it for 300 years in this country. They certainly have dealt with it for the past 50 years since voting rights were established for black folk as well as for white folk. But now you have the former head of the Republican Party in Florida saying, yeah, it's true. Of course it's true. Of course it's true. What do you think will happen? Absolutely nothing. And the reason nothing will happen is because the political system is now an outright owned and operated subsidy of corporate America. That includes both political parties and every single candidate. To some extent, unless that candidate is not taking corporate money of any kind, unless that candidate or office holder is not taking a single goddamn dime from these corrupt capitalist pigs. Now, if they are taking a $10 ham sandwich from the corporatist, then in as far as I'm concerned, they have just corrupted themselves. Now, is that too purist? Are you kidding? Take a look at what has happened to our political system. And of course, the voters allowed it to happen because so many Democrats said, well, I'm going to be a Reagan Democrat. I really like him. And a lot of other voters said, ah, to hell with it. It's raining today. I'm not going to go vote. Well, here we are. And here the Republican Party of Florida is in a clear under oath deposition stating categorically that, yes, suppression of votes. Why, of course, it's the lifeblood of the Republican Party. 7 past the hour. The Malloy program in full swing this evening. Michael in Roswell reminds me of the company that stole the election in Florida by purging the voter rolls down there. Eventually it became known as Choice Point. Couldn't remember it. And as Mike points out, didn't Greg Palast eventually find that the number of the purge list in 2000 was more like 93,000 people were purged from the voter rolls in Florida? Yes. So, you know, I'm personally left with that dilemma since I know that the game is rigged. I mean, come on. Come on. If you know the game is rigged, do you keep playing? I'm serious now. Supposing some of the people in your neighborhood decides to get together a pickup game of softball, you know. And, you know, you choose up teams. But your team has to use bats that are made out of lead. And the other team gets to use bats made out of some kind of hardwood, like regular bats. Are you going to keep playing? I mean, you're going to go up to bat again and again and again, knowing that you have to swing, you know, 40 pounds of lead while somebody else is swinging, what is it, 32, I don't even know, 32 ounces of wood, 36 ounces of wood. I mean, come on. So that's the dilemma I have. I don't know what your dilemma is. That's mine. I know. I mean, we went and voted today. We had election. I'm just talking about it last hour. We had, it was a general election, but it also contained the special local option sales tax to solve the traffic problem. And this was like a 15, 18-year project. This is something that was going to take a long time. It would benefit the next generation. This is the part that really pisses me off. Most of the people who vote are older people in these kinds of elections. They're just older people. They're people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And it was this group that said to the people who are in elementary school, the teens and the college students, screw you. We don't care about you. We're not going to pay a penny now, a penny sales tax. We're not going to pay it now. And consequently, 30 years from now, when you people that are still living here are choking to death and dying of toxic emissions and everything you have to put up with, we don't care about you. This is the problem. This is the whole problem. This is a problem with this thinking that has so insinuated itself into decision-making processes now, especially political. I've got mine. I don't care about you. This goddamn baby boomer generation, Gen X and a couple other generations just waiting for these sons of bitches to all die off and get out of here. They really are. And rightly so. I mean, a lot that the baby boom generation did that was culturally, it was quite impressive. But in terms of I've got mine, to hell with you. Wow. What an attitude. Especially when the life of the planet and everybody on it is at stake. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, it is very difficult to continue to participate, for me, to continue to participate in a system that I know is rigged. So what do I do? Well, I've got two choices. I can just continue to blab my mouth off on the radio and do nothing, or blab my mouth off on the radio and become active, which I think I am, in trying to stop a system that continues to kill us. I mean, God damn it. Are you going to continue to participate in a system that is killing you? How do you do that? Not you, but you know, how does one do that? How do you do it? How do you continue to tell yourself, nah, I'm going to keep participating, even though you know the game is rigged? Even though every time you come to bat, you have got to swing that 30-pound lead baseball bat and your opponent is swinging a 36-ounce one. Well, I mean, that's goddamn insane. It's crazy. But the majority of us are going to keep doing it. until the time comes when everybody has opted out of the system, which is what the right-wing crazies want, or the system has been completely changed. Now, odds are, I know the demographic of this audience, odds are you and I are not going to be around to see that change or that destruction. We're just not going to be able to. It's not going to happen that quickly, if it happens at all. But there are only two choices here again. You know, choices. All the way through this conversation, choice, 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 choice. Here's the next set of two choices. Democratic. Well, let me put it this way. Social democracy or fascism. What do you want? What do you want? The voting patterns seem to indicate that what we want is fascism. Okay. God damn it. Let's go. Let's do it. And if it gets to that point where a real homegrown kind of fascism really starts to show itself, I mean blatantly and openly, it's showing itself now, but you have to be a little bit politically astute to see it. So let's say that the American style homegrown fascism really takes over and everybody starts to see it. Then what? Okay, now we're back to two more choices. Accept fascism or rebellion? What do you want? So it's just a series of choices, and the first one has to do, I think, with whether or not you participate in a system that you know is corrupt. That's assuming that you know it's corrupt. The evidence is clearly laid out by people who have made devoted a huge chunk of their life to educate you and me. So what are you going to do? I cannot recommend anybody vote for anybody. I just can't do it because that makes me some kind of a hypocritical shill for something. I'm just not going to do it. The system as it exists is corrupt. The system as it exists does not respond to the needs of the people of this country. It doesn't, God damn it. Everything from how minimum wage all the way up to how we provide health insurance for each other, all the way to our attitude toward other countries, all the way to how much money we just take from each other and slam into the military-industrial complex. We just give it to them. It doesn't work. Except that it's working towards the ultimate goal of the right-wingers, and that is utter death and destruction. Now, if you disagree with that, then prove your argument. Show me how the right wing is moving toward progressivism, how it's moving towards a decent life and an opportunity for everybody. Show me how that's happening, and I will shut my goddamn mouth and retire. Show me how that's happening. You cannot, because it is not happening. And don't expect me to get inside your delusion and your denial and all this garbage crap that swirls around inside your head about, well, you know, things aren't that bad, Malloy. God damn, this is the most negative program I ever heard. I'm going to switch out of here. Goodbye. Adios. We'll be right back.
If you're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening on XM. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, guy?
Pretty good. How are you?
All right. Long time no speak.
Yeah, I hear you.
Not the last time, but one of these times in the past, I talked to you about putting wind vanes on the side of highways to generate.
Yeah. Energy. I remember.
I've given up that idea.
All right.
I've found something considerably more intriguing.
And that is?
On the internet, there is a site called Solar Roadways with two R's, solarroadways.com. And this is a electrical engineer and his wife in Ohio built a prototype panel for a roadway, solar panel, with contract funds from the Federal Highway Administration. And they got successful testing on it, so they got a phase two contract for $750,000, and they're going to put together a parking lot. Now, let me tell you some of the benefits of this.
Well, what does it do? It charges the...
That's what I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
First of all, it generates power, of course. And they're working on a way to store that power. In the meantime, power that's generated... If you make all the roadways a part of this, it becomes a electrical system, an electrical grid.
Right.
You no longer have the need for power lines. And the system is decentralized, so it's secure. You can't bomb a plant. You know?
Right.
It's intelligent. You can change lanes readily. It has a lighting system built into it so that they can change lanes. They can put stop signs anywhere they want. They can inform you as to what the traffic is ahead. It provides its own heating, so there's no more road and ice, road ice or snow, so you don't need snow removal equipment. It's self-healing. It has a communications device every 12 feet so that they can redirect signals. It carries phone, TV, internet. The roadways themselves are illuminated at night, so you have no problem seeing the road. Provides its own lighting. You have no more power outages because the sun runs 24 hours a day. And power that's generated in the western part of the United States when it's still daylight can feed the night power of the eastern United States. And so forth around the world. We would no longer need coal at all, and we would burn far less fossil fuels. We'd have no more dependence on foreign oil at all. There'd be far less pollution. Just in not burning coal, you would drop your greenhouse gases emissions by 50% on that one factor. All electrical vehicles would now have outlets anywhere they want to power up so that internal combustion engines would become totally obsolete. There'd be no power lines, and all homes and businesses would connect to the grid via their driveway, and their driveway would be a solar panel as well. And the nicest thing about it is it pays for itself because solar energy is free.
Do you know what I foresee is the possibility of this husband and wife that came up with this, that they'll be disappeared.
Yeah, I thought about that too, but it's too common sense and too many people can do it. Plus, oil is on its way out.
Well,
they're changing their money to water. Okay? Because they know oil has 50 years, maybe 100 max, but we'll always need water.
Well, let's hope the planet has that long. As far as this idea is concerned, Chuck, you know, I love to hear stuff like this because it lets me know that people have not given up on the idea that this seemingly insoluble problem might be solved if we just use the brain power that you know, millions of years of evolution has given us. That same evolution, of course, was unable to stop us from being murderous and hateful and deceptive, but it did give us some brain power. And so I'm glad you shared that, Chuck. What's the name of it? What's the website? I got to go real quick here. What's the name of the website?
Solar Roadways, two R's.
You mean two R's because the two words are connected?
Right.
Okay, Solar Roadways. All right, I got it. Chuck, thank you so much. Don't be a stranger.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, sir. That's an idea. Solar Roadways, and the two R's are connected. Solar Roadways. Check it out during this break. We'll be right back.
Took all the trees, put them in a tree museum, and charged the people a dollar and a half to see them. No, 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 don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone. You leave paradise and put up a fucking lie.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. I want to play something for you. You've been following, I guess, to some extent. Not that it really matters in the long run, unless you happen to be the object of this kind of hateful bigotry. And that is the Chick-fil-A president mixing up his Sikh religion with chicken chunks. And it's really, it's just gotten so ridiculous. It really has. I mean, why don't these people keep their goddamn mouths shut? When it becomes so important for anybody to blab about their religious beliefs, why can't people just go to their place of worship, if that's what they want to do, and do their little worship thing to the sky spook, and then and leave it there? If you want to live a religious life, or you want to live according to your religious principles, live it. But why do you have to constantly be shoving it out there for everybody else to smell? I mean, what the hell is the point?
Well, I'm a Christian. Well, I'm a Muslim.
The Jews don't really do it, do they? So vis-a-vis this Chick-fil-A nonsense with these crazy sons of bitches who run Chick-fil-A, dumping their brand of hellfire and brimstone Christianity onto their, what is it, mixed into a special sauce and slammed onto their fatty, sodium-laden Chick-fil-A sandwiches. And it's just I'm just so sick of this. I really am. Do you know, I'm old enough to remember when people just didn't talk about their religious beliefs in public, much less jam it down somebody, you know, smash somebody across the face with it. What the hell is wrong with you religious people? Are you that insecure about your superstitions that you want everybody else to hear about it or believe it or have to deal with it? Why don't you STFU? Seriously. So now we have a right-wing pastor / radio host slamming the Muppets for what he calls this sick son of a bitch taking the sodomy route by severing a planned kids' meal partnership with Chick-fil-A. because of this restaurant chain's anti-gay stance. Right Wing Watch reports that the guy, Kevin Swanson, of something called Generations with Vision, your vision is up your ass, buddy, he expresses nostalgia for a time when Christians, quote, brought the death penalty upon homosexuality, end quote. He wants to go back to that. He says, quote, a Christian perspective ultimately brought the death penalty upon homosexuality between roughly 350 AD and roughly 18. I'll tell you what. Let me just play the soundbite. This is a guy named, or his co-host is Dave Buhner. And his name is Swanson. Who does it start with, Kathy? Does it start with Swanson?
Yeah, Kevin Swanson.
Kevin Swanson is the first one to speak. Now, just, you got your bowl of popcorn. Listen to these sick, sorry, perverted sons of bitches who claim an affinity with Jesus Christ. Listen to this.
A Christian perspective ultimately brought the death penalty upon homosexuality between roughly 350 AD and roughly 1850 or so. So for about 1500 years, that form of life had pretty much been eliminated, except here and there. It was in the closet, but it was almost unheard of for over 1,000 years until recently. Of course, now you have a massive, massive increase of this kind of thing. I'd say this is a really bad idea for somebody to stand up against the laws of God. And Dave, you realize that this is a brave venture. I mean, this has been about a 30-year plan, 40-year plan maybe, to completely consume America with a pro-homosexual agenda. And Dave, I just don't think it's going to last. I think you're going to see Jesus Christ coming up against this kind of thing. And as we have said already about the Joe Paterno case.
Well, it's pretty obvious to anyone who's onlooking that tolerance only runs one direction.
Yeah.
You only can tolerate gays. You can't tolerate those who don't support gays.
And Kermit the Frog's not eating Chick-fil-A either.
No. They're pulling out that.
Yeah.
The Chick-fil-A used to have
Muppet
like a little,
thing.
Have an association with Muppets, Happy Meals,
yeah,
kind of thing. But Kermit the Frog doesn't want to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that Kermit would not that interested in Miss Piggy. Maybe interested in another frog.
Maybe Dan Cathy should consider doing a frog fillet for one of the sandwiches.
The frog fillet?
The frog fillet, yeah.
Just
in commemoration of Kermit the Frog pulling out of his support for Chick-fil-A. And Dave, you know that Sesame Street and the Muppets are probably going to take the sodomy route. And I don't know, do they support NAMBLA? I'm not sure. We should ask if the Muppets support NAMBLA.
Maybe we should. I don't think the frog fillet will sell. This is just me, just a little marketing device. I think Miss Piggy on a bun, that's a better
Miss
that's a winner.
Piggy on a bun. That sounds good. Kind of fried pig on a bun kind of thing.
Yeah, it's sausage, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A little bacon.
Okay. Piggy on a bun.
These are some sick sons of bitches, aren't they? This is a radio program. This is one of these twisted, bent, death-eating, filthy, so-called pastors. Listen to this garbage. Listen to this. I mean, it's just... it's just unbelievable. Now, either this half-wit is lying, or the Chick-fil-A company is lying. The Chick-fil-A company claimed that they severed the ties with the Henson organization because the little pieces of plastic horse droppings that they were giving with their chicken sandwiches for the little kitties to go choke on were too dangerous for the little kitties to go choke on. So Chick-fil-A claims that they're the ones that instigated the divorce with the Henson organization. The Henson organization, of course, is the one that speaks the truth. I wouldn't trust a evangelical Christian to tell me it's midnight when both hands of the clock are straight up. These people lie through their goddamn teeth. Their entire lives are built on lies. So this punk, this Kevin Swanson, he takes the other route. Well, you know, Henson, the Henson organization bowed out because they're going the sodomy route. What the goddamn hell is wrong with these people? What is the fixation, boys, on my penis? Why are you so concerned about a male sex organ? What is wrong with you? My God.
I don't think since Pat Robertson said Tinky Winky was gay, the little Teletubby, because he was purple and he carried a purse, I don't think I've heard anything quite as ridiculous as been calling the Sesame Street Muppets sodomites.
On the sodomy route or whatever.
They're going to go the sodomy way or something.
Oh, my God. I can't.
Elmo. Tickle me, Elmo.
It gives a whole new meaning to tickle me, Elmo, doesn't it?
Elmo loves ABBA.
How do people like this... like this freak that I just played for you and his sidekick, how do they breathe? How do they drink water? In other words, what I'm saying is, how do they live a life? Did you say tickle me homo?
Tickle me Elmo.
Tickle me Elmo. I wasn't sure what you said.
Elmo loves Judy Garland.
I just, you know, and I can't, it's difficult for me to make jokes about this kind of stuff. A gay or lesbian comic can just play hell with these bastards. But to me, it's evil. It's evil that is put out there by twisted, sick, perverted human beings who traffic in hate, who traffic in death, who traffic in lies and deception. And it's just hard for me to, you know, find the humor, like tickle me homo or whatever. Let's take a break. Every time I do play a soundbite from people like that, I just feel the need to go get one of those... what are those soap pads, the steel wool soap pads called? Brillo pad. And just scrape the garbage off of me. For the hour, and of course Pat Robertson has to dip his wick into the uproar here. He now thinks that Democrats are committing political suicide because the Democrats have decided to stand up for the civil rights of the LGBT community. You know, the Democratic National Convention is going to, at the convention, the Democratic Party is including marriage marriage equality. There's no such thing as gay marriage. There's only marriage. Let's call it marriage equality. The Democrats are going to include it in its official platform. Democratic Party is. So on his television program today, this filthy old bastard said the Democratic Party, quote, has a death wish in backing marriage equality. Robertson says this, quote, for the Democrats to go out on that limb, it just seems like to me that they are further alienating themselves from the mainstream of America. If that's what they want to do, fine. But it will mean the death knell of their party, it seems like to me. And, of course, that's what they're doing, but maybe they have a death wish. Jesus, God. You know, this is the same sick son of a bitch who is compared homosexuality to demonic possession. He has claimed that legalizing gay marriage or legalizing marriage equality would result in a downward slide toward bestiality and child molestation. And he's also suggested, I don't know what this means, that gay marriage would lead to what he calls angel rape. What the hell? Angel rape? Oh, and you remember on September 13th, 2001, Robertson and the now rotted Reverend Jerry Falwell got together and they blamed the tragedy on, quote, the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make an alternative lifestyle. Remember that? Hey, Falwell, is there any meat left on your bones or have you totally decayed? Huh? He thinks he's in heaven, or he thought he was going to heaven. What the hell is angel rape? What is angel rape? I've never heard that one before. A recent a survey released today by the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life shows that 48% of the overall public supports marriage equality. 44% oppose it. Among Democrats, 65% support the right of gay couples to marry. I mean, what a thing to even be debating. Right? I mean, to say that angels are being raped because a couple of men or a couple of women want to form a civil contract. Screw the religious. They're not asking for some rabbi or imam or priest or pastor to marry them. Who gives a goddamn about that religious nonsense? What they're saying, if I hear it correctly, is that they want the same civil right as anybody else to form a marriage contract. That's not gay marriage. That's marriage. Period.
Yeah, but then
who was it that said, that's right. It was that stinky Rick Santorum that said once what he calls gay marriage is made legal, then men will want to marry their dogs? What? Or was it just to have sex with them? I mean, that's how perverted and sick these people are, these religious freaks. I mean, you just say that marriage equality. Wow! You're sleeping with a horse! No, I'm talking about, well, that's what it's going to lead to! Really? Really? Horse sex? Angel rape. What in the hell is he talking about? I've never seen an issue that stirred up these right-wing Christians and probably the right-wing Jews and Muslims, too. It's just that I don't pay that much attention to the right-wing Jews and the right-wing Muslims from a religious standpoint because they're not constantly screaming and shouting from every forum they can get their hands on about these ridiculous issues. It's always the Christians who are doing it, Protestant and Catholic. They're the ones doing it. I know that the Islamic faith doesn't recognize homosexuality in any form, although they certainly have practiced it for the past 1,300 years. And I know that the Jewish tradition doesn't recognize it either, although if you take a look into the Old Testament, you'll find probably half of their old prophets were gay. Jeez, I mean, come on. But it's these Christian evangelicals, Protestant and Catholic, who are constantly just slamming this whole issue up against each other. What is it that they find so fascinating? You know my attitude. If all these people who are screaming about it would just try it one time and find out that it is just try a little gay sex, boys, and find out it just is what it is. It's not like raping angels, I don't think. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.